Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. It's early. My name is Peter Werwine. I'm senior editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. And today we're talking to Jack Linehan, a lawyer for Epstein, Becker, and Green, who is an expert on drug distribution pricing and a knotty issue, a fairly controversial area, copay accumulators. And Jack is speaking with us or joining us from Baltimore this morning. So good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Peter. Thank you for having me.
So the people watching this and may be sort of somewhat familiar with copay accumulators, but it's sort of fundamentally a little tricky and confusing. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering whether you could just give us a sort of a 101 on how they work. And you and I have talked before. And I think that they were developed in response to drug coupons and payment assistance programs.
Yeah, sure. So a copay accumulator program is something that a plan or PBM administers to try to neutralize the impact of a manufacturer copay coupon. Now, manufacturers provide copay coupons oftentimes to beneficiaries to help facilitate access to certain branded drugs. So beneficiaries can use coupons to cover their out-of-pocket cost at the pharmacy point of sale. Now, historically, not only do they help beneficiaries at the point of sale, but the coupon value also would count against that beneficiary's deductible or maximum out-of-pocket limit. And so what that would do is that it would help the beneficiary sort of progress through the benefit parameters of the plan. Now, plans and PBMs have very much been opposed to coupons through the years because they feel in many situations it can undermine the mechanisms that a plan or PBM will set up to try to promote more cost-effective drug utilization. In other words, if a beneficiary has a coupon, they are shielded from sort of the impact oftentimes of, you know, having to pay more upfront for a more expensive drug. And so a lot of times those beneficiaries would be incentivized to use a more expensive drug where there might be a cheaper alternative. So in the past few years, plans and PBMs, due to certain technological advances, have been able to identify when many beneficiaries are using coupons at the point of sale. And they're able to then, you know, they still accept the use of the coupon, but they prevent that coupon from applying or counting against that beneficiary's deductible at the point of sale. And so what happens is the beneficiary can use that coupon to get access to the drug for several months, but once that coupon amount is then exhausted, the beneficiary still has to pay the full remaining amount of their deductible before the plan benefits start to kick in.
Indeed. So a beneficiary might say for the first, hypothetically, 3 or 4 months of the year, because of a coupon, have no out-of-pocket costs. And then because of the way the accumulator works, there's suddenly, the way they experience it, they're suddenly paying high out-of-pocket costs because they're under their deductible, and it kicks in, say, in May or April.
Yeah, that can definitely happen. And without question, accumulators and also coupons themselves are very controversial. And they're really sort of two sides to the argument. And I think it's important sort of to understand why they are controversial. And for coupons, I've already discussed this a little bit, but plans and PBMs say, look, these coupons are really promoting more expensive drug utilization, which leads to higher plan costs. And it gets more difficult for us as a plan to be able to manage our costs because of that. And in fact, the government, which is, of course, probably the biggest insurer in the world, has said that coupons are just not allowed, right, under government healthcare programs. So a lot of commercial plans are saying, you know, look, you know, the government doesn't allow it. And so we don't like the use of coupons either. But accumulators, which is the mechanism that they've developed to combat coupon use, are very controversial as well. And one of the reasons why is like you noted, many beneficiaries will have a coupon. They're taking a drug which has a, you know, pretty high cost sharing amount, and they'll be going along just fine for several months, able to get access to that drug. But then when the coupon runs out, they're sort of surprised by the deductible all of a sudden impacting them, because, you know, many beneficiaries, due to past history, have been able to use that coupon to also pay down their deductible. Well, with the accumulator, that doesn't happen. So all of a sudden, you get several months in, your drug's going fine, and boom, you have to face a pretty high, you know, cost-sharing obligation in order to keep trying to, you know, take that drug. And so manufacturers and also some patient advocacy groups have said, you know, this can really be bad for certain patients, and that plans and PBMs need to do a better job of providing notice of how these accumulators work. And because if they don't, you know, it can really hurt drug adherence, which in turn can lead to, you know, worse health outcomes or even higher costs.
So let's just sort of go through who is advantaged and disadvantaged. Maybe you can't really sort of separate coupons from accumulators. So it seems from the patient's perspective, a coupon is a big advantage. It's an expensive drug that they might be taking, and it shields them from the cost and from, you know, the cost under their deductible. They may not even reach their maximum out-of-pocket costs because of the coupon. And the coupon also advantages the drug companies in broad strokes, because it incentivizes perhaps a product of theirs, use of a product of theirs, that perhaps is higher priced than competitors, maybe a brand name drug versus a generics. So I think it's sort of easy, but on the other hand, the coupon disadvantages the payers, the PBMs and plans, because as I've just mentioned, it seems to, it would work to incentivize perhaps a higher cost medication. So could you go through the winners and losers with respect to accumulators, if I've captured the winners and losers, so to speak, of the of how coupons work?
Yeah, I think you summarized it pretty well. I mean, simply stated, manufacturers and certain beneficiaries like to be able to use coupons, whereas they oftentimes do not like the application of accumulators to prevent those coupons from applying to deductible or maximum out-of-pocket limit. On the other hand, plans and PBMs very much like accumulators. They're able to use them to reduce their overall financial liability because they're able to still accept the manufacturer's coupon payment, but then prevent it from applying to the deductible. And the way that works is, all things considered, that's going to reduce the plan's financial liability over the course of treatment. So it's a very powerful tool that plans and PBMs have been able to use. Now, one thing I want to say, though, is that we are speaking in generalities. So, most drugs don't have coupons. And, coupon accumulators are becoming more popular, but maybe about at least half plans don't use them. And it really depends on the nature of the plan, depends on the nature of the situation. Many times coupons are being offered for drugs that are expensive, but there is no cheaper alternative. And that's a point that manufacturers and patient advocacy groups really want to drive home, because it's not always the case that they're creating more expensive utilization. But of course, on the other hand, plans have an argument that many times coupons are more expensive, and they feel that they have an obligation or a right to enforce their plan mechanisms to try to control costs more generally. So it's really a battle that you see out in the industry between these two opposing sides or opposing stakeholders that has been going on for several years now. And it's really been in an unregulated space, at least until more recently.
So you've written for a piece for Managed Healthcare Executive that we posted several weeks ago that took the reader through some of the back and forth of CMS regulation in this area. But I believe that there was a final rule that came out in May of this year. And perhaps you could explain the two or three most salient aspects of that rule that came out.
Yeah, I think it's, before we get to the more recent rule, let's just a little bit more background, especially to see this in sort of the historical context. Like I noted, coupons are not allowed under federal programs, and that's been the case for many years now. But in the commercial space, coupons have generally been permitted. Generally, not always. There are a couple states that restrict them a little bit, but usually it's pretty much open season in the commercial setting. And then at the same time, a few years ago, due to technological developments, plans and PBMs have started to develop accumulators, and there have not been any major restrictions on their ability to do so. So this is a war going on within the industry. But last year, in April of 2019, CMS decided to try to, get involved a little bit, and they tried to set up a sort of regulatory framework in this area. And in that final rule from last year, what they said was that plans could use accumulators to prevent coupons from applying to the maximum out-of-pocket limit for branded drugs that are associated with generic alternatives. So at first blush, this appeared to be a rule that would benefit plans. However, it could be inferred from the statement in that regulation that in all other circumstances where you have a drug without a generic equivalent, that the plan is in fact required to ensure that the coupon does apply to the maximum out-of-pocket limit. So on balance, this was viewed as actually more restrictive of accumulators. This was a pretty surprising event last year. It caused a lot of sort of confusion in the industry. And later, in about August of last year, the government said they would not enforce this new policy and that they would reconsider it. They had noted that this had led to some controversy and confusion, but also they were concerned that, if they were too restrictive of plans might not be able to comply with certain other legal requirements. And one set of requirements has to do with high deductible health plans, which seek to qualify for health savings account status under the IRS rules. And the government and the IRS has taken the position that plans are required to prevent coupons from applying against the deductible and the pre-deductible phase. This is a pretty complex area, but yeah. I think the takeaway is that it's the government's position that plans actually are supposed to use accumulators in that setting. And so they were concerned that if they restricted plans too much about when they could or couldn't apply accumulators, then plans might not be able to comply with, you know, these IRS rules under certain circumstances. Also, in the meantime, a handful of states have enacted laws that would, that do in fact restrict accumulator use in certain circumstances, at least for fully insured plans that are subject to state law.
Right.
So the government's saying, wow, there are these other rules out there that plans have to comply with. So what they've done actually is that May of this year, the final rule that you just alluded to, they came forward and they said, you know, in a final rule and said that plans are permitted but not required to employ accumulators to prevent coupons from applying against a beneficiary's cost-sharing obligations. And so the idea is that this provides a lot of latitude to plans about when or under what circumstances they want to apply accumulators.
It sounds like the May final rule basically was a rule not to regulate, and that plans can use accumulators when they see fit, putting aside the issue for a while of state regulation. Mm-hmm. That it seems like they backed off regulating accumulators in May. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, one sort of interesting way to look at this is that about a year ago, CMS was coming in and it appeared as though they really wanted to put some regulations in this space. But then with the more recent rule, in a lot of ways, they've sort of stepped back and said, you know what, plans, you're going to have a lot of leeway to use this. So it is pretty open for what plans can do, although CMS did say that they did, note very briefly that there are other things that a plan needs to be aware of, such as uniformity, anti-discrimination requirements. Mm-hmm. So they didn't explain that very much, but the idea is that they want to remind plans that you can't use accumulators like any other sort of formulary mechanism in a way that would be discriminatory to certain types of beneficiaries. So I think that, observers will be sort of mulling over that in the future. But of course, there are other rules out there. There's state law rules, IRS rules. So it's not completely open season, but it's definitely, the CMS is taking more of a hands-off approach when it comes to plans and PBMs at the current moment. But this area is really evolving. So, a year, a couple of years from now, things could very much change again.
Sure. Speaking of change or changing the subject slightly, there's been another CMS rule regarding the treatment of coupons under the Medicaid best price rules. And again, I'm wondering whether you could give us a little tutorial mm-hmm. about how the Medicaid best price rules that came out recently will affect coupons and accumulators.
Yeah, so, and this is a very, very recent development. CMS issued a proposed rule we're in July now, so it was in June, almost about a month ago. There they proposed to revise the treatment of patient assistance offered by manufacturers under what's called the best price rules of the Medicaid drug rebate program. Now, historically, drug coupons and other forms of manufacturer assistance have generally been excluded from a manufacturer's calculation of best price, or what's called average manufacturer price. And those prices are really used to determine the amount of rebates that manufacturers are obligated to pay the government in order to participate in the Medicaid program. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a very sort of complicated area of the law, but it's also very significant to drug manufacturers. Now, drug manufacturers have for many years relied upon this exception for coupons and other forms of patient assistance. But in the proposed rule, CMS is saying that this assistance can only qualify for that exception if, in fact, the full value of that assistance is passed through to consumers. And what they seem to be saying is that when a plan applies an accumulator, the plan in some sense is benefiting from the coupon and is really taking advantage of that coupon. So, as a result of this proposal, what that would mean is that manufacturers would have to determine, oftentimes in advance, whether or not plans are in fact applying accumulators to their coupons. And if they are, then that coupon value should not be excluded from best and ANP calculations, but instead included in those amounts. And what that would do is that would actually serve to reduce best price and AMP. And if that happens, if coupons must be included into those calculations, then manufacturers may have to pay increased amounts of rebates to the government and thereby have more financial liability under the Medicaid drug rebate program.
It seems then one consequence of this best practice rule is that the manufacturers will pull back on coupons generally, or maybe the value of them, because it's going to affect their best price.
Well, it could. I mean, it'll be interesting because right now we're in the comment period, and manufacturers and many other stakeholders are likely writing comments to the government. And one of the points that manufacturers are making is that look, it's very difficult for us to determine in many situations whether a plan is in fact applying an accumulator. And so it's just going to be very hard as a matter of logistics for us to be able to say, okay, here we included it in best price, here we do not. My sort of guess is that if this proposal was in fact finalized, manufacturers really could end up doing one of two things. I think some manufacturers may just take a sort of default position that they're going to include or incorporate coupons, patient assistance into their best price calculations, because there are pretty big penalties that manufacturers face if their price reporting is inaccurate. So they might just want to take the sort of risk adverse route and just say, fine, we'll just include it in best price and we'll pay more in rebates, because those manufacturers say, like, look, we need to give this assistance. We just need to. But on the other hand, I think that there are other manufacturers who may decide to say, you know what, we're just going to reduce the amount of patient assistance that we provide. We don't want to face penalties for doing things inaccurately. And, we just can't take that financial hit if we have to incorporate the value of these coupon payments into best price. So we may just need to reduce the amount of assistance that we provide. So, this proposed rule is, if it's finalized, it would have, I believe, a pretty substantial impact on both coupon use, patients' assistance, and the use of accumulators. I think if it's enacted, it would also increase the use of accumulators by plans, because it would really solidify that plans have a lot of leeway to do so, and that by implementing these, they really could deter coupon use. And so it could promote the use of accumulators, which is, there is some irony to that, because in the proposed rule, CMS had indicated some concern about accumulators and their impact. So really interesting to see what's going on. It's a complicated area, and it's highly evolving. I hope this is a good summary for what's going on sort of right now in the moment, but folks will have to check back in many months from now, and definitely a year from now, because I think this area will continue to evolve.
Yeah, it does seem that sort of pulling back even further, that this whole area of coupons and accumulators, has been a running battle in the war over drug high drug costs, and that it's going to continue, and that when CMS or any regulator tries to intervene, there's a consequence, but it seems that there are unintended consequences as well. That you're just sort of left thinking that it's hugely complicated, and that, boy, I need to speak to people like Jack Linehan to get a grasp of what's going on. So I think maybe we'll check back on the running battle in a couple months with you, and you can update us on how the best price rule is playing out, and what CMS ultimately decided to do. So,
yeah, thank you. Thank you, Peter. And I think you touched upon an important point. I mean, I think that coupons, accumulators, it's really a microcosm of the overall issues with drug pricing and costs. And the fact of the matter is that we have specialty drugs, we have drugs that are doing things that were, they're really doing pretty amazing things that were not even deemed possible a decade or two ago. But that sort of innovation costs money. And this is all about how is the cost of that innovation to be best sort of spread through our society or sort of absorbed as a country. And it's tough. There are definitely trade-offs, and there can be winners and losers. Some people benefit, some people don't. And it depends on the circumstance. So it's a complicated area. And it's an area where lawmakers are rightly concerned about, and it'll be interesting to see where we go from here.
Well, thank you for your time this morning, and we'll chat again, I assume. So
thanks. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on MHE, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.